Chapter 4. It was early morning. Thin, ghostly trails of vapor were left behind from a light rain that had come and gone during the night. The humidity would have been stifling but for the trade winds that swept clean the sodden atmosphere and dispersed it over the blue ocean beyond the encircling reefs. The sandy strip of beach that curled from Diamond Head to the Reef Hotel was empty. But already tourists were beginning to trickle from the great glass and concrete hotels to begin a day of sightseeing and shopping excursions. Lying crosswise on the sweat-dampened sheets of his bed, a naked Pitt gazed out the open window at a pair of minor birds who were fighting over a disinterested female perched in a neighboring palm tree. Black feathers flew in profusion as the birds squawked riotously, creating a disturbance heard for nearly a block. Then, just as the miniature brawl was about to reach its final round, Pitt's door chime sounded. Reluctantly, he slipped on a terry-cloth robe, walked yawning to the door, and opened it.
"Good morning, Dirk."
A short, fire-haired man with a protruding face stood in the hall.
"I hope I'm not interrupting a romantic interlude."
Pitt stretched out his hand.
"No, I'm quite alone. Come on in."
The little man crossed the threshold, looked unhurriedly about the room, then stepped out on the balcony, taking in the splendid view. He was nattily dressed in a light tan suit and vest, complete with watch and chain. He had a neatly trimmed Ahab, the whaler's red beard, with two evenly spaced white streaks on each side of the chin, presenting a facial growth that was strikingly uncommon. The olive face was beaded with perspiration, either from the humidity or from climbing the stairs, or both. When most men wove their lives through the channels of least resistance, Admiral James Sandecker, chief director of the National Underwater and Marine Agency, hit every barrier, every obstacle in the shortest line from point A to point B. Sandecker turned and nodded over his shoulder.
"How in hell do you get any sleep with those damned crows screeching in your ears?"
"Fortunately, they don't fly amok until the sun's up." Pitt motioned to the sectional couch. "Get comfortable, Admiral, while I get the coffee going."
"Forget the coffee. 9 hours ago I was in Washington. The jet lag has my body chemistry all screwed up. I'd prefer a drink."
Pitt pulled out a bottle of scotch from a cabinet and poured. He glanced across the room only to be met by Sandecker's twinkling blue eyes. What was coming? The head of one of the nation's most prestigious governmental agencies didn't fly 6,000 miles just to chat with his special projects director about birds. He handed Sandecker a glass and asked, "What brings you from Washington? I thought you were buried in plans for the new deep-sea current expedition."
"You don't know why I'm here?"
He was using his quiet, cynical tone, the one that always made Pitt involuntarily cringe. "Thanks to your meddling in affairs that don't concern you, I had to make a special trip to bail you out of one mess and throw you into another."
"I don't follow."
"A talent I know only too well." There was the slight hint of a derisive smile. "It seems you aggravated a hornet's nest when you showed up with the Starbucks message capsule. You unknowingly set off an earthquake in the Pentagon that was picked up on a seismograph in California. It also made you a big man on campus with the Navy Department. I'm only a retired cast-off to those boys, so I wasn't offered a peek behind the curtain. I was simply asked by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, courteously, I might add, to fly to Hawaii post-haste, explain your new assignment, and arrange for your loan to the Navy."
Pitt's eyes narrowed. "Who's behind this?"
"Admiral Lee Hunter of the 101st Salvage Fleet."
"You can't be serious."
"He personally requested you."
Pitt shook his head angrily.
"This is asinine. What's to stop me from refusing?"
"You force me to remind you," Sandecker said calmly, "that in spite of your status with NUMA, you're still carried on the active roles as a major in the Air Force. And, as you well know, the Joint Chiefs frown upon insubordination."
Pitt's eyes looked resentfully into Sandecker's.
"It won't work."
"Yes, it will," Sandecker said. "You're a damn good marine engineer, the best I've got. I've already met with Hunter, and I minced no words in telling him so."
"There are other complications," Pitt didn't sound very confident, "that haven't been considered."
"You mean the fact that you've been laying Hunter's daughter?"
Pitt stiffened.
"Do you know what that makes you, Admiral?"
"A sly, old, devious son of a bitch?" Sandecker asked.
"Actually, there's much more to this business than you've taken the trouble to notice."
"You sound ominous as hell," Pitt said, unimpressed. I mean to, Sandecker replied seriously. You're not joining the Navy to learn a new trade. You're to act as liaison between Hunter and myself. Before this thing's over with, Numa will be involved up to its ears. Numa has been ordered to help the Navy with whatever oceanographical data they demand. Equipment? If they ask for it. Finding a submarine that disappeared 6 months ago won't be a picnic. The Starbuck is only half the act, Sandecker said. The Navy Department has compiled 38 documented cases of ships over the past 30 years that have sailed into a circular-shaped area north of the Hawaiian Islands and vanished. They want to know why. Ships disappear in the Atlantic and Indian Oceans, too. It's not an unheard-of occurrence. True, but under normal circumstances, marine disasters leave traces behind. Bits of flotsam, oil slicks, even bodies. Wreckage will also float ashore to give a hint of a missing ship's fate. But no such remains have turned up from the ships that vanished in the Pacific Vortex. The Pacific Vortex? That's the name the seamen in the Maritime Unions coined for it. They won't sign on a ship whose course takes them through the area. 38 ships, Pitt repeated slowly. What about radio contact? A ship would have to go down in seconds not to transmit a mayday signal. No distress signals were ever received. Pitt didn't say anything. Sandecker simply sipped his scotch, offering no further comment. As if on cue, the minor birds began their noisy antics again, shattering the brief silence. Pitt shut them from his mind and stared steadfastly at the floor. There were 100 questions swirling around in his head, but it was far too early in the morning for him to conjure up theories on mysterious ship disappearances. After the silence had dragged on a bit too long, Pitt spoke. Okay, so 37 ships will never reach port again. That leaves the 38th, the Starbuck. The Navy has the exact position from the capsule. What are they waiting for? If they locate the remains, their salvage ships won't require an act of God to raise her from 10 fathoms. It's not all that elementary. Why not? The Navy raised the submarine F-4 from 60 fathoms right here on Oahu off the entrance of Pearl Harbor, and that was back in 1915. The armchair admirals who do their thinking through computers today aren't convinced that the message you found is genuine. At least not until they've had time to analyze the handwriting. Pitt sighed. They suspect the dumbass who brought in the capsule of perpetrating a hoax. Something like that. Pitt forced back a laugh. So that at least explains the transfer. Hunter wants to keep an eye on me. You made the mistake of reading the capsule's message. This alone takes you from the ranks of innocent bystander and classifies you as top-secret material. Also, the 101st Fleet wants to borrow our new long-range FXH helicopter. None of the Navy's pilots are checked out on it. You are. And if an unfriendly nation got it in their heads to try and locate and salvage Uncle Sam's newest and most advanced nuclear sub before we do, it's first come, first serve in international waters, you're a sitting duck for their undercover agents to kidnap in order to discover the Starbuck's position. It's nice to be known and loved, Pitt said. But you forget I'm not the only one who knows the Starbuck's final resting place. Yes, but you're the easiest to come by. Hunter and his staff are safely confined to Pearl Harbor, working around the clock in an attempt to clear up the puzzle. The Admiral paused, stuck a massive cigar in his face, lit it, and puffed meditatively. Knowing you like I do, my boy, an enemy agent wouldn't have to use muscle. They'd simply send their most seductive Mata Hari to the nearest bar and let you pick her up. Sandecker noticed the sudden look of pain that gripped Pitt's face, but he went on. I might add, for your own information, that the 101st Fleet is one of the finest undercover salvage operations in the world. Undercover? Talking to you is like floundering on a reef, Sandecker said with forbearance. Admiral Hunter and his men have raised a British bomber from the water only 10 miles from the Cuban shore right under the nose of Castro. Then they salvaged the New Century off Libya, the South Wind in the Black Sea, the Tari Maru within sight of the lights of China. In each case, the ships were all salvaged by the 101st before the nations whose waters the vessel sank in knew the score. Don't underestimate Hunter and his gang of underwater scrapmongers. They're second to none. The Starbuck, Pitt said. Why all the cloak and dagger? For one thing, Dupree's final position is an impossibility. The only way the Starbuck could possibly be where his message said it lay was for the ship to fly. a feat marine architects haven't as yet accomplished. Not with 10,000 tons of steel, at any rate. Pitt looked steadily at Sandecker. It's got to be out there. Underwater detection systems are far more advanced now. It doesn't figure that the Starbuck remains lost or that a massive search turned up absolutely nothing. Sandecker held up his empty glass and stared at it. As long as there are seas, ships, and men, there will be strange, unsolved mysteries. The Starbuck is only one.